My guest is Jack L. High. His new book, The Lobotomist, is a biography of Walter Freeman, the neurosurgeon who championed the lobotomy and performed the procedure in about 3,400 patients. So, Freeman and a lot of other neurologists felt that Freudian therapy, talk therapy, was not effective for psychosis. Neurosis maybe, but not psychosis. But on the other hand, all the people that gave the lobotomies to weren't necessarily psychotic. Some of them had chronic depression or other problems that you probably wouldn't define as psychotic.
Freeman's idea of the ideal patient changed over time. At the very beginning, he was dealing with patients who were very seriously ill and using lobotomy as a last resort treatment. But over time, he changed his thinking, and that was one of the reasons why he eventually split with his partner, his neurosurgeon partner, James Watts, because they disagreed on this. Freeman came to believe that lobotomy is most effective when used in the early stages of mental illness. So he wanted to catch people before they got to the hospital.
So how do you see Freeman now? Do you see him as this kind of monster doctor who mutilated the brains of patients for outcomes that weren't very very good, or do you see him as somebody who really did his best in the early history of neurosurgery?
I started my book seeing him as the monster that many people do, and so I can understand that feeling quite a bit. If you were to look at the early drafts of my book, you'd see a much different Freeman than what is in the final version. But as I got into the research and I encountered a mountain of Freeman's papers at the archive that holds his personal and professional papers at George Washington University, I was overwhelmed, not just by the quantity of material there, which made me a little nauseated how much it was, thrilled at the same time because of how much there was, but because of all the dissonant voices that were coming out of it. There was, in great quantity, the voice that I was expecting to hear, the voices of the doctors who disagreed with Freeman and thought he was a criminal. But then also, right alongside that, there were hundreds of letters and, to my amazement, boxes full of Christmas cards from patients. They had sent these to Freeman to express their gratitude, you know, offer him their best wishes. They were inviting him to come to their house for dinner when he was stopping by in their area. They obviously considered him an extended member of their family. This was very unexpected to me.
Did you meet a lot of people who had had lobotomies?
No, I haven't. And one reason for that is there are not many still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Freeman did most of his lobotomies in the 40s and 50s. Most of his patients were middle-aged or close to middle-aged at the time of their operations. And people in state hospitals had short life expectancies to begin with because of the bad conditions they had gone through and because of their diseases. So the number of names that I could get were limited. One man whose words I use in my book, who had a lobotomy at the age of 12 in 1958. I don't know what he would be diagnosed as having if he were a child now, but his behavior was very violent and destructive then. He almost killed his little sister. Now he's working in San Diego as a school bus driver, and if you were to talk to him, you wouldn't notice anything amiss. So there are a small number of those people out there, but I would guess that of Freeman's 3,400 patients, there are maybe 50 still alive, and I've only encountered a few of them.
There's a very popular lobotomy song by the Ramones called Teenage Lobotomy with lines like, "Guess I'll have to break the news that I got no mind to lose." I assume you know the song.
Yeah.
How does that song sound to you after doing this book? I mean, it's a really upbeat, it's a really kind of fun song. I don't know if it's still fun to you to hear it.
When I first started the book, that song and others like it, you know, the word lobotomy appears an awful lot in rock lyrics, and it bothered me at first because I thought it was trivializing what had happened in decades past. But now I see it as something else. You know, the word lobotomy has really entered our culture and means something different than it did back in the 40s and 50s. It's, you know, a synonym for stupidity and cluelessness and things like that. And I'm now glad that song by the Ramones and other songs, you know, and Tom Waits' famous phrase, "I'd rather have a full bottle in front of me than a full frontal lobotomy," helps keep the topic alive. And without them, it could be that these patients and this doctor, you know, would vanish into the mists of time.
How did lobotomies go out of fashion?
They began to go out of fashion in the mid-50s when effective pharmaceuticals came onto the market. These were drugs. The main one was a drug called Thorazine, also known as chlorpromazine. And these drugs had a good effect, better than the effect that lobotomy had, without the permanent side effects, usually. So starting in the mid-50s, there was a gradual slide that lobotomy went into. Through the 50s, through the 60s, even a little bit into the 1970s. And by the end of the 70s, lobotomy was pretty much gone. But that doesn't mean that psychiatric surgery was gone. Psychiatric surgery has continued to this day. There are a small number of hospitals that have continued to do brain operations to treat psychiatric conditions, mainly depression and obsessive compulsive disorder. They're cutting much smaller regions of the brain than Freeman did, and usually not targeting the frontal lobes. But those are very small in number. What I think will be growing more in the future is a different kind of surgery, surgically implanted devices that deliver an electrical charge to regions in the brain, much like a pacemaker delivers electricity to the heart. And just in the past couple of weeks, the FDA has given approval to a new device that delivers electricity to a nerve in the brain as a treatment for chronic depression. But I do think that Walter Freeman played a big role in bringing to mind or in advancing the biological part of mental illness. He is a big, important proponent of the brain as a factor in psychiatric illness. And I think that's probably his greatest legacy. But I think there is another important lesson to be learned from his life, and that's all about the perilous nature of scientific and medical innovation. Most procedures that people develop don't work or don't work very well. And lobotomy was in that category. And then secondly, it's all about perspective. Now we look back, you know, from this vantage point of a half century and are amazed at how ridiculous the whole idea of lobotomy sounds. That's our perspective. But for the people who were living it back then, it was not a ridiculous idea. It was an idea worth trying. And I agree that it probably was worth trying. And where Freeman failed or where he was faulty was in trying to carry it along for so long.
Well, Jackal High, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry, for having me here.
Jackal High is the author of The Lobotomist, and he's the executive vice president of the American Society of Journalists and Authors.